Moving to section 2.7. This is almost the last section in chapter 2. Right?
This is the last section where I'll be presenting, at least.
The chapter 2 group will give a presentation on the very last section, 2.8, and their solutions to the exercises there. But that, a month from now. Okay. So this is about infinite series. Now, we've done a little bit with infinite series already. They first appeared in section 4. Now they're coming back in section 7. Say some more stuff. That was about the monotone convergence theorem. So this is about sequences, right? Bounded plus monotone implies convergent. Okay, now, how does that... how does that look in the series, right? Well, series is the limit of the sequence of partial sums. If it's loud over there, you can shut the door. So, for series, it's bounded partial sums along with, what does monotone become? Well, one version of monotone is where the sequence is increasing. So how do you make your partial sums increase? Well, your partial sum, as you go from one partial sum to the next, you keep adding the next term, right? So remember, the partial sums are something like this, right? The terms are the individual things you're adding up. So if your terms are not negative, say, then your partial sums are increasing, right? You're always either adding zero or adding a positive number, so they're increasing. So that means it's convergent. That was how we turned something about sequences into something about series. And what 2.7 does is it applies the Cauchy criterion, which we talked about last time. So a sequence is Cauchy if and only if it's convergent. Now, in terms of series, What you have to look at now are the partial sums. They form a sequence, right? As you add more and more terms, you get a sequence of partial sums. Right? So if that partial sum sequence is Cauchy, that's equivalent to the series being convergent. Partial sum sequence, you'd have A1, then A1 plus A2, then A1 plus A2 plus A3, and so on. The series, of course, is often written with the sigma notation, so you might see something like this, or with the dot, dot, dots. Now, what the author likes to do is prove lots of stuff about convergence, all right, using this trick here. Okay. Lots of theorems of 2.7 are proved using the Cauchy criterion for the proper, for the partial sums sequence, right? And in your homework, say in exercise 9, what you're going to do is you're going to prove a theorem. Right? You're going to prove the convergence half of the ratio test. Okay. When you do exercise 9. And the way the exercise goes is you use results that are proved using the Cauchy criterion. Part A of exercise 1, right, directly asks you, right, like it proves something is Cauchy. Exercise 1 is about giving three different proofs of the alternating series test using three different techniques. One of them is the Cauchy criterion. Another way is using monotone convergence theorem. Another way is using the nested intervals property or nested intervals theorem directly. Example of one of the things proved in 2.7. If a series converges, then the terms tend to zero. So if you're adding up a bunch of numbers and you expect the sums to actually converge towards something, then the late terms, as you go further out in the sequence, they better be getting small. Otherwise, the series isn't going to stabilize. And the proof just uses that Cauchy criterion, right? So you can have a... Let's say the sequence starts at n equals 1, okay? It could start at n equals 5 or whatever, the series, right? But whatever, let's just say the index starts at 1. So then we let S sub n denote the partial sum of the first n terms. Okay. So assuming the hypothesis, the if, right, part of this, so assuming the series converges, then the sequence of partial sums has to be Cauchy because the partial sum sequence converges. Okay. Okay. Well, what does this have to do with the sequence of terms? So somehow we need to show that given epsilon positive, we've got to show that eventually the A sub n's are close to zero. After a finite amount of waiting, the distance from an to zero is less than epsilon. That's what the limit statement requires of us. We need to be able to do this for an arbitrary small positive distance epsilon. So how do you connect the partial sums S sub n with, say, A sub n? Let's write a few things here. A1 is equal to S1. I'll write the S1 on the left, actually. S2 is A1 plus A2. S3 is A1 plus A2 plus A3. I'm interested in the A's there. I'm trying to prove something about the A's given something I know about the S's. So I want to somehow turn stuff about the A's into something about the S's. So what if I solve for the A's in terms of the S's? How can I express A2 here in terms of S terms? S2 minus, how about S2 minus S1 instead of A1? Then it'll just be all S stuff over there, right? And how can I express A3 in terms of the S's?
S3
minus S2. Okay, so now we can turn our goal about something involving A into something involving just the S's. And we can see the general pattern now. It's S sub n minus S sub n minus 1. For all n, well, at least for all n starting at 2, right? I suppose the way I set things up, S0 isn't defined, so I can't do 1 minus 1. Yeah, good. Well, we don't care about, finally many exceptions. We just need to get eventually something is smaller than epsilon, right? Okay. Well, let's see. This is where we need to bring in the Cauchy property. The partial sums are a Cauchy sequence, so that means eventually any two terms in the partial sum sequence are epsilon close together. So that's, I'm going to use that to show that this thing here, the S sub n minus S sub n minus 1, I'm going to make that smaller than epsilon. So let me, to be extra concrete here, let's say what we mean by eventually, right? There's some waiting time, n, right? Such that... for all numbers, at least capital M, or capital N, all natural numbers, we have the terms here in our sequence, partial sums, epsilon close together. There is such a waiting time. So that means if you just wait long enough, we could plug in an n and an n minus 1 instead of an m and an n, right? So for all n, I guess we needed at least n plus 1, right? If n is at least capital N plus 1, then n and n minus 1 are at least capital N. But that implies that the partial sums that we care about are less than epsilon away. So that's the proof written out in certainly more detail than the book gives. You don't necessarily need to put in this much detail, but you see the core idea. The partial sums are converging to something, so the late terms in the sequence of partial sums, including late consecutive terms, have to be close together. And the difference between consecutive terms of partial sums is just one of the terms of the series. Okay, so here we go. If we wait at least capital N plus 1 here, then we get that our terms in the series are less than epsilon away from 0, which is just what we needed to prove our limit statement. Comments about this proof? Sometimes this is called the divergence test. Or the nth term test. A lot of the theorems in this section are named tests because they give you ways to test a series in a certain way. And depending on the outcome of the test, you can say the series converges, or you can say it diverges, or you can say, I don't know yet, depending on the outcome of the test. You have to be careful with this test because it doesn't say that if the terms go to zero, the series converges. It says if the series converges, then the terms go to zero. So the correct way to turn that around, to determine whether or not a series converges is this way. If the terms don't go to zero, then the series can't converge. The fancy name for that is contrapositive, right? If P, then Q is the same as if not Q, then not P, right? So if your sequence of terms doesn't converge, or it converges but not to zero, then if you try and add up those terms, they're not going to converge. Here's a little application. If I have a number R of size at least 1, then the series 1 plus R squared plus R cubed plus R to the fourth plus diverges. This is a geometric series. And it's just we took this turned around fact here, made it into our little test, right? And we use it. We know that the sequence of these powers of R does not go to zero. One way you can say that is because if you let, say, epsilon equal to 1, then the distance of the nth power here, r to the n, minus 0, well, that's just the magnitude of r to the n, which is the magnitude of r to the nth power, which is at least 1 to the nth power, which is 1, which is our epsilon, right? That's one way to see that this sequence doesn't go to zero, because it's always at least distance 1 away from zero. It never does what it's supposed to do, right? For every epsilon, it's eventually supposed to be closer than epsilon to zero, but it's not here. Okay? It never gets less than epsilon away from zero in this example. In fact, what is it going to do? Well, if R is exactly 1, then you get a sequence that's always 1 for every power of 1. If R is negative 1, it oscillates between 1 and negative 1. If R is greater than 1, it goes off towards positive infinity. If R is less than negative 1, you get bigger and bigger numbers that oscillate between positive and negative. A divergent geometric series. Now, the much more useful kind of geometric series is the convergent one, right? When you take powers of something smaller than 1. Bit of algebra for the next part. Let's say I have r to the
10th plus R to the 11th plus R to the 12th plus R to the 13th. And I multiply it by 1 minus R. What do I get?
You were in your college algebra or high school algebra class, you're asked to simplify that. What would your answer be?
R to the 10 minus R to the 14.
Very good. Very good. Multiply by 1 for each of the terms. Now multiply by negative R. And you get a bunch of cancellations. So, for all integers, so positive, 0, or negative, A less than B, and for all reals, R. Why is it pooping? Okay. So we can say what the general pattern is here. R to the A plus R to the A plus 1 plus R to the A plus 2, all the way out to, let's say, R to the B minus 1. Now, so think of the A as being 10 in my example here, and B minus 1 being 13 in my example there, and then B is 14 in my example here. So take this thing here, the series, times the 1 minus R. Now divide both sides by 1 minus R. We get a fraction. The one exception, I suppose, would be if R was 1. So let's not let R be 1. Right. So we get R to the A minus R to the B in the numerator, and 1 minus R in the denominator. Right. That's a finite geometric series. Now we want to take it to the limit, right? Have it go on forever. So take the limit as b goes to infinity. That the R to the B term goes away to 0 if R is smaller than 1. Because if it is, then we know that the sequence R to the B plus, we just know that the limit as b goes to infinity of r to the b is 0, right? So that's a very special series, the geometric series. It's special because we have a very explicit formula for the partial sums, and in the convergent case, for the limit of the partial sums.
So for example, when you want to prove the ratio test in exercise 9, right? How do you do it? You have to compare a complicated arbitrary series to a geometric series, or at least a constant multiple of a geometric series. So the only way you get traction in a lot of problems is by comparing a messy series to a nice series, like the geometric series. Okay. All right. So, when you were looking at 2.7, did you notice anything you wanted to ask me about? Any requests? I'm drinking a lot of coffee here, so I'm ready for whatever. Come on, throw it at me. So the r to the b term goes to zero. So it's just here. I'll put another line. It's r to the a minus zero in the limit, in the numerator, right? So the numerator is just going to be r to the a in the limit. We're using the algebraic limit theorems, right? You can think of the r to the a and the 1 and the r as constant sequences, and then the r to the b is the interesting sequence, which goes to 0. So, since there's no division by 0 here, we know that limits will respect subtraction and division. So we can just take all the limits separately.
Anything else?
Let's wrap up the 2.7.1. It says approving the alternating series test. Like, you're going to prove that it over here it states that the sequence of partial sums and then Sn equal to A1 minus A2 plus A2, and then it says convergence. So we're going to use the same criterion as the Cauchy criterion to prove this?
Right. The part A says you have to prove that sequence of Sn's is Cauchy. Right?
Yeah, but my question is, because I'm having many trouble, like having the basic, my outlines are not organized. So here I'm supposed to start by, then my assumption is going to be the opposite.
If you were trying to do an indirect proof, you could try that, right? You could try and assume all the hypotheses, but then assume the conclusion that it's Cauchy is false, and try to get a contradiction. But I think you just want to do a direct argument here. So remember, the theorem 2.7.7 there has some assumptions on it, right? You can't do this argument for any series. It's only a series that satisfies the assumption that the terms are decreasing and tend to zero, right? And then you modify the terms by multiplying them by alternating powers of -1. So I guess I might be just the magnitudes of the terms are decreasing and tending to zero. And then if you put a negative sign in front of every other term and add them up, that's the claim that we're going for. So, like, in if I was looking at 2.7 part A, right, you know, I would assume the hypotheses, right? I'd assume the magnitudes of the terms are decreasing. And then, what was the other part? All right. And that they go to zero. And I want to prove the Cauchy criterion, right? So. In terms of the partial sums, right? So then you have to expand the definition, right? Given an epsilon, right, we must prove that eventually, the difference between any two partial sums, that would be a direct proof, right? I assume all the hypotheses, and then I look at my goal. In this case, I was asked to prove something was Cauchy, and I look at the definition of the stuff involved in the goal. In this case, I have to prove something for every positive epsilon. Okay, so I assume I've got a positive epsilon, and then I'm going to have to prove it. Giving a hint in that I'm telling you, you know, go ahead and try to prove it directly. Don't try to be clever and do an indirect proof to a contradiction with this one. It's more trouble that's worth. Okay. Now, So you all have to think back to Calculus 2, right? When you did a chapter in your calculus book on sequences and series. Lots of questions in Calculus 2. Does this series converge? Or does that series converge, right?
Or does it diverge, right?
So some of this stuff is just some review, right? Like in exercise 2 here. Exercise 2 just says decide whether each of the following series converges or diverges, right? It doesn't ask you to prove anything. It just says decide, right? So remember what you would have done in Calculus 2 if somebody threw all these series at you. The one difference I've noticed between what's going on here and, say, Calculus 2 is that we haven't done some of the more advanced tests. This book has not covered the root test or the integral test that you may have learned in Calculus 2. But it's covering all the other tests in this section. Either it proves them or it asks you to prove them in the exercises. It's even got some really fancy advanced tests that you never learned in Calculus 2, like Abel's test and Dirichlet's test in exercises 13 and 14. Those don't really come up unless you're trying to prove a few things, say, in complex analysis or something. But yeah. Okay, so let me take a look at this. Back to what you would have done in Calculus 2. You can't think of anything, then start thinking about all the different tests covered in section 2.7 and how you might use them. Comparison test, that nth term test I just talked about, alternating series test, absolute convergence test. What about this one? What do you think? Converge? Diverge? The terms converge to zero for sure, but that doesn't mean that the series converges, because you could have like the 1 over n series, the harmonic series, where the terms go to zero but the series goes to infinity. But how do we know this one actually does converge? Compare it to something simpler. What do you compare it to?
It's supposed to be 1 over 2 to the n power plus n. I mean, I don't know if it makes a difference.
Oh, is that... It doesn't. You're correct. Yeah. It's going to converge in any case. What do I compare this to that's a little bit simpler?
1 over 2 to the n.
Yeah. 0 is less than or equal to this complicated thing, which is less than or equal to the simpler thing, 1 over 2 to the n, or I'll write it as a power of 1/2. So the comparison test is for non-negative series, right? You can get into trouble with negative series because you can have, say, like 1 over n type terms that some of them are positive and some of them are negative. And so depending on the signs, it could converge or diverge, and a simple comparison isn't enough. But for terms that are all 0 or positive, either it's going to add up to infinity or it's going to add up to finite. So if you can show that something bigger adds up to finite, you're good. And the rigorous version is, you know, it's proved in the book, it's the comparison test, right? We got some non-negative series here. The bigger series converges, right? Right? That's R equals 1/2. That's our geometric series. Right? Sine of n radians, divide it by n squared. Add that up over all the natural numbers n. So does that converge? What would you have done in calculus 2 here? Yes. And how did you reach that conclusion?
Because the graph can divide.
Right, but if I had put sine of n over n, say, you might not be so confident in that.
Would you compare it to n over n squared?
Well, n over n squared is 1 over n.
Yeah, well, exactly.
And one over n diverges when you add it up. 1 over n squared converges, though. That came up in 2.4. You add up the 1 over n's, they went to infinity. You add up the 1 over n squared, they go to something less than 2. Or add up the 1 over n squared, right? But sine of n radians could be a negative number, right? The sine wave oscillates between 1 and negative 1. So you can't directly use the comparison test like in part A. You have to use one other test first.
Make a ratio test?
Well, no. How could we make this issue with possible negative stuff go away? Right?
Well, you make a step test.
You said
if I have a number that might be positive or negative, what's the standard way of just throwing away the minus sign?
Absolute
value, right? And that is the absolute convergence test, right? That's in section 2.7. 2.7.6. If a series converges absolutely, meaning it converges when you throw away the negative signs, then if you put those negative signs back, it will still converge. So we can say that this converges because if you throw on the absolute value signs, then it converges. So you don't need to put absolute value signs on n squared because it's already positive. Now, once we've made the series non-negative like this, we're good to go. Because now we can just round up the sine of n to 1, right? Because the sine wave never gets above 1. And that was discussed in 2.4, right? How this series converges. So two tests there from section 7. First, the absolute convergence test. Second, the comparison test. It's all that calculus 2 stuff is going to come back to you now. Whether you want it to or not. More complicated. You'll notice the author doesn't even try to write a formula for it. He just writes out the pattern. Because the formula is kind of ugly, frankly. is even the pattern there, right? The first term seems kind of different than the others, but after the first term, the numerators are increasing by 1, and the denominators are increasing by 2. So later terms will look like
There's a good reason the author didn't try and write the formula.
It's annoying to come up with the right thing. It's something like n on the top and 2n plus something or other or minus something or other on the bottom, right? What's happening here with these terms? Think about what these terms would look like when n is larger. Maybe we should add in some more terms now that we think we've got the pattern here. So the next
one is getting smaller and smaller as it progresses. And then it's alternating between positive and negative.
Okay. Yeah.
So 1 minus 3/4 will leave you with 1/4.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that point, you're going to add something less than 1/4.
4/6 is not less than 1/4. 4/6 is 2/3. Two-thirds. Yeah. I'm not sure I want to do the fractions, but couple of tests I could think of using here. One would be the nth term test, right? If the nth term doesn't go to 0, it diverges. The other would be the alternating series test, since the signs are alternating, right? If the nth term does go to 0, and the sizes of the terms are decreasing, then it would converge. I think the sizes of the terms are decreasing. We haven't exactly proved that, but I think they are. So the question is, does the nth term go to 0, right? Forgetting about the partial sums, just looking at the separate terms, 1, 3, 4, 4, 6, 5, 8, 6, 10, 7, 12, 8, 14, right? Forgetting about the pluses and minuses, are they tending to 0 or not? How do you know they're not tending to 0?
Well, because when you take 1 minus 3/4, you're left with 1/4.
No, but I'm not talking about the partial sums, just talking about the terms.
The term itself?
Yeah, like the 1, the 3/4, the 4/6, the sequence, right? Decreasing sequence, but does it decrease and eventually get close to 0, or does it stop early, so to speak? Right? Does it decrease and but get close to some other number? It's going to converge to something, but does it converge to 0?
So it converges to 1.
Yeah, you're right. Look at all those fractions in the sequence. They're all at least 1/2, aren't they? In fact, they're all strictly greater than 1/2. Right? So even if you're not confident that it converges to one half, I think you can be confident that they're all at least a half. Right? Well, they're all even strictly greater than half. So they do go to a half in the limit, but all we need to know for the purposes of the series is that these don't converge to zero. Because they don't converge to zero, if you add them up, it's never going to stabilize. You're going to subtract something bigger than a half, then you're going to add something bigger than a half. Then you're going to subtract something bigger than a half, then you're going to add something bigger than a half. So you're always going to have the partial sums oscillating up and down, right? By about a half, right? So it's not going to converge to one number. It's never going to make up its mind. And now, okay, I mean, even if you put in the minus signs on the appropriate terms, it's still not going to zero, right? Because their sizes are all bigger than a half. So they're all at least a half away from zero. So now, in terms of adding it up, we can say that it diverges. With me on this? Questions? For the series to converge, the terms have to get small eventually. These don't get small. They're always bigger than a half. Positive or negative. All right. Now what about this one? This one has a name, actually.
Whoa.
Oh, it's not what I... Okay, it's not what I thought it was. Oh, tricky. Okay. I have to think a minute. What is the pattern the author intends here? Since he doesn't give a formula. What's Dr. Abbott here thinking? Okay, I get that the sizes are all the sizes of the harmonic terms, 1 over n. But what's the pattern of the signs? What's his intent here? For the dot, dot, dot. My interpretation is that he wants every third term starting with negative one-third to be negative. So I'm going to interpret this as meaning the series continues with two more positive terms, right, and then a negative term, then two more positive terms, and then a negative term, two more positive terms, then a negative term, right? I can't prove this is his intent, right? But let's assume that this is his intent. Alternating series, right? Because we're not going back and forth between positive and negative. We're doing two positive terms and then just one negative term. So we can't use the alternating series test.
Why is it not an alternating series again?
Because an alternating series is positive, negative, positive, negative, positive, negative, like that. This is positive, positive, negative, positive, positive, negative, positive, positive, negative, positive, positive, negative, over and over again. Well, if it converged absolutely, we could rearrange it. But converging absolutely means you make them all positive, throw away all the negative signs and add them up. But if you do that, then you've got the harmonic series, the 1 over n's, and that adds up to infinity. Okay, so it doesn't converge absolutely, right? In fancy terminology, it converges. If it converges, it converges conditionally. Yes. So the question is, you know, just in terms of sizes, the sizes of the things add up to infinity. So the only way it can converge is if somehow we get enough positive and negatives canceling out to make it converge. Now with the alternating harmonic series, where you have the 1 over n's and then you really do alternate, 1 minus a half plus a third minus a fourth plus a fifth, there's enough cancellation that it converges. It's known, in fact, to converge to the natural log of 2, about 0.69. But I'm not sure this is going to cancel out enough. Here's my thinking here. So, see, put a plus in the number 1, so it's clear. See, 2 positives.
Because when you subtract, you're subtracting 1/3, 0.6, 0.9. Mm-hmm. Then those numbers are, they have a pattern. The ones that are being subtracted.
Yeah. What if we look at every 3 terms? Okay. So we're wondering if this converges. 1 plus a half minus a third is equal to, let's just say that it's bigger than 1, right? And see, I'm rounding it down because I think that there isn't going to be enough cancellation. And the next 3 terms, right? I'm going to round down that middle fifth there to a 6, so that the next group of 3 terms is at least a 4th.
The other one is 1/15.
Yeah. I mean, we could get the exact fraction if we want, but the idea here is to simplify, either by rounding up or rounding down to something that we can understand more easily. See, I'm concerned there that after every 3 terms, I'm adding another number, right, on net, right? It looks to me like, every 3 terms is going to increase, and then even after the decrease, after the first 2 terms, it's still a net increase. And, okay, this looks a lot like the harmonic series, right? 1 over 1, 1 over 4, 1 over 7.
Actually, it would be kind of close to 1/6.
Sure.
Smaller than.
Yeah. But my hunch is that it's diverging. So to prove it's diverging, instead of rounding up, I'm going to round it down and show that something smaller diverges. And then this will have to diverge too. That's my idea. If I wanted to prove it converged, I would try rounding it up to something simpler that I knew converged, or that I hoped I could prove converged. So that's my idea. I think it's going to diverge, and I'm going to prove it by rounding down to something else that I can prove diverges. right, let's see if I can actually pull that off. Okay, so... So I have these partial sums. Let me write it like that. And the idea is I'm... The third partial sum is at least 1. And then when I get to... let me skip down to S6, right? 1 plus a half... minus a third, plus a fourth, plus a fifth, minus a sixth. Okay? So I'm taking those first 3 terms and rounding them down to 1, and taking the second 3 terms and rounding them down to a fourth. Let me skip to the 9th partial sum. So I'm going to have 1 plus a half minus a third plus a fourth plus a fifth minus a sixth plus a seventh plus an eighth minus a ninth. And I'm going to round those terms down to 1 and a fourth and a seventh. Starting to see a pattern here. If I had this, if I had say S3n, then doing all my rounding stuff, I think the last term would be something like I think 3n minus 2, right? Because the 7 here is 9 minus 2. I'd have something like this. I'd round it down to 1 plus a fourth plus a seventh plus da 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 all the way out to 1 over 3n minus 2. Partial sums of a harmonic series, right? It seems to be skipping 2 out of 3 terms, though. Let's see if we can round things down to something even more. Right. So, the problem... I'd like to just make this be... can I do that? Yeah. I'd like this to just be 3n, right? That would make my life easier. I'd like to factor out a 3 from the whole thing. Now, the good news is I can do that if I round down a little more. Because if you round up this denominator, it'll round down the whole fraction. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make these into, think of this first term as 1 over 1, okay? Increase the denominators of all of these by 2. So 1 goes to 3, 4 to 6, 7 to 9. And now you can factor out the third. I finally can argue that it diverges, because I know that the harmonic series, its partial sums go to infinity. then, you know, okay, I'm dividing by a third, so it's going to go to infinity three times slower or something like that. But we can say that the original series over there, diverges. That's not quite a proof, is it? Now, again, this one didn't ask me for a proof, but if I was asked for a proof here, here's how I could make it a little more rigorous, right? More formally, the harmonic series partial sums is unbounded, right? As you increase n, this thing grows without bound. Or more precisely, what I want to say is it's not bounded above. So you divide it by 3, it's still not bounded above, right? Because if the original thing is not bounded above by 3 million, then after you divide it by 3, it's not bounded above by 1 million, for example. Okay. And so you divide it by 3. And so that's not bounded above either. Okay? But then, if this isn't bounded above, then our even bigger thing here is not bounded above. Okay? So S3, S6, S9 isn't bounded. Okay? So it doesn't converge, right? Convergent sequences are bounded. So every third term of the partial sum sequence forms a divergent subsequence. In fact, it goes off to infinity. Well, that means that if you include all the terms I skipped, S1, S2, S4, S5, it's not going to converge, right? It's not going to eventually get close to one number, because every third term, you're getting bigger and bigger going off to infinity. Right? If you have a divergent subsequence, putting in more terms doesn't make that go away. Right? So the original sequence of partial sums does not converge. Or equivalently, okay, using the word divergent, okay, that one diverges. That would be how I'd make it into a proof if I needed to. Never enough time for all the exercises I want to do. Let's see. All right.